diplomatic skills to me is knowing how to connect the different dots and drive a coherent mindset and approach and converge on a solution.
Hi, 各位 Kara 的听众，大家好，欢迎来到 Leading Ladies 的单元。我是主持人 Tiffany， 也是 Kara 的创办人。在30分钟的节目中，透过我和各产业女性领导者的对话，了解目前各种趋势议题，如多元共融的领导力、组织或管理的规模化、新时代理财、永续经营、成长性思维等讨论，以及更具全球视野的产业观点，和我们一起打造你的影响力，成为你想象的领袖。嗨，各位 CareHer 的听众，欢迎大家回到 Leading Ladies 的单元，我是主持人 Tiffany。 我们刚刚过完每一年三月我们一起约定的国际妇女节论坛，今年已经到了第五届了。那我们在论坛里每一年都会定调今年最重要，我们希望所谓的女性领导者、女性人才都可以知道的一些议题，比如说像 talent 人才、 technology， 以及最后很重要的 thrive together， 所谓的影响力，更有影响力的投资。那在这之间呢，我们一定会提到的呢就是能源，因为能源无所不在，也是一个将来很需要的一个技术以及人才可以更加的观察的一个领域。所以我们今天邀请到了呢，也是我们在论坛上的其中一位讲者，他呢特别从新加坡飞进来，来跟我们一起参与讲所谓的 Investing and Impact 这个议题。那我们今天呢就来欢迎刚刚从新加坡来特别来跟我们多多分享关于新能源这一块，以及在新的能源市场里面呢有哪些需要的领导力特质，以及人才可以怎么样的呢在这样的领域发挥。那让我们来欢迎的是 The Asia CFO of GE Vernova, Patrick Kahn. Welcome, Patrick.
Thank you, Tiffany. Thanks for having me here.
So,Before, Patrick, introduce yourself a little bit about why you were in energy and assume that you've been energy field for quite a long time, I wanted to share how I met Patrick, just to showcase a very sweet and cute story. So we were in Singapore running another CareHer experience event. And of course, we were with a bunch of our CareHer members, connecting, having fun, having dinner, and also with one of our core member, a mentor, which is Gwen.And then we were all having a very long dinner, and Gwen was like, I really need to meet my CFO. I have a meeting I need to talk to him about. And we're like, just invite your CFO here. Like, we're more fun here. And so at that point, when the dinner went on for 4 hours, Patrick showed up at the restaurant without a seat, without extra food for Patrick. You stayed and chat with us. And then the only thing we asked you to do was,Patrick, can you take a photo for us? So that was the first time we met Patrick. So I'm very grateful that after that incident, you're willing to come back to be our speaker at the summit and at the podcast.
No. Thank you for having me again. And I think I came back because now you promised that I could take a picture with you.
Yes.
Instead of for you. That, yes. That is great.
So. That is the true representation of an ally, right?So, Patrick, can you tell us a little bit about your journey at GE? Because it's quite a long career experience in that field.
Absolutely. Only 25 years.
Only 25 years, yeah.
No, I've been with GE for a while and done various things. Was with the aerospace industry, but also running through different corporate functions before I finally joined the energy industry. So it is, to your point, a very long cycle industry. But you have so many things to learn and to pick up, so much expertise to build. And interestingly, it is really in the past, I would say 5 to 6 years, where you find that you are in this perhaps pivotal moment because the energy transition is right in front of us and we're in the middle of it. So it is pretty exciting.
After 25 years,
After 25
you still
years.
Find it even more exciting right now,
Absolutely.
I would say. Right?
Absolutely.
So recently, there is a demand of renewable energy. And I think your colleagues have repeatedly been sharing with us the importance of the trilemma of energy. Can you quickly refresh us with the memory as those are the three important pillars to understand energy and where we're at currently?
Right. So I think the energy trilemma, right? And you're trying to balance between affordability of mm-hmm. energy, sustainability, and reliability mm-hmm. is essentially the pillars of the energy transition itself. And there are reasons why we call it a transition and not an overnight flip. It is essentially laying out a path for any economies or government to be able to transition mm-hmm. from where they are now and eventually hopefully to a state where they are net zero. Mm-hmm. But the journey in between has to be sustainable, has to be affordable, and it has to be reliable, because anything that pertains to the energy narrative for any country mm-hmm. has, in fact, elements of national security,
right?
Social, economic impact,
or
and
medical,
so on and so forth,
right?
Or medical, yeah. right? So I think the extent of the energy transition and how it is managed needs to be aspirational, but at the same time, it has to be realistic mm-hmm. and practical, because mm-hmm. every government will have different, considerations agenda, yeah. and agenda they need to juggle, mm-hmm. right?
So you mentioned that back in your long 25 years of this service, usually you see a pivotal moment every 5 to 6 years. Has that changed now? Because right now all the technology are coming in, things are changing more rapidly. Would you still say 5 to 6 years?
No, I think it has somehow been much more compressed today. Mm-hmm. I think in let's call it the first 20 years of my stint in the energy industry, it has been a bit more perhaps progressive, but in a more gradual and mm-hmm. manageable manner. And it is certainly a bit more perhaps in certain swim lanes or in certain silos. For example, you would see advance in technology, mm-hmm. right? Moving from X percentage efficiency to the next generation of gas turbines in some examples, reaching new efficiency levels. So you're looking at progressive changes. But the transition we're in today is quite different,
yeah.
right? All of a sudden, you find that the boundary conditions of electricity generation has changed, mm-hmm. right? And how do we make sure that we are responsible as an OEM, as a technology provider that GE is, how do we make sure that we contribute in a positive manner in this energy transition? I think that's really our mandate mm-hmm. today.
I think you definitely mentioned a very different setting. Back in the days, we are looking to be progressive and innovative, and we're less concerned about sustainability, humanity, all these other factors that right now you have to consider as an OEM, right?
That's right.
As an OEM. So that's I think that's actually more stressful as a giant in this field. And how is GE coping with that? Our dear member, Gwen, always, when she's introducing GE, she always start with, we're not doing electricity, we're not doing home appliances. And then she would go on and say, we do this and that. There's so many different departments and spin-offs that's happening. And I think that probably echoes with a lot of the change of the landscape right mm-hmm. now. Can you share with us what's the recent spin-off?
Sure. So about a year ago, we spun off the healthcare division of GE. So the second spin-off will be GE Vernova, mm-hmm. and this will be around this time frame mm-hmm. in quarter two. And this spin-off is really essentially the power division or the energy division of GE. Mm-hmm. And finally, the businesses that remain that is not part of the spin-off will mm-hmm. finally become the aerospace mm-hmm. Division of GE, what used to be the division of GE. Mm-hmm. Okay, so healthcare, GE Vernova, and GE Aerospace, these are the large three business units that was formerly part of GE. And mm-hmm. going forward, they are all individually listed on the stock exchange mm-hmm. as independent companies. Mm-hmm.
Can you share with us a little bit of what Vernova means? It sounds to me kind of like Wakanda. Like it's a cool term or right. place that's futuristic.
Right.
Is it cool though?
You are quite insightful
okay.
because that is exactly what it is. It is a coin word, a okay. coin term. It has connotations of the future. Mm-hmm. Ver basically means green. Mm-hmm. I believe it has its roots in Latin. Nova is really innovation, right? New and mm-hmm. so on. So I think this paints a picture of our aspiration of where we want to be, right? We want to be a company that is driving green mm-hmm. energy. So as such, decarbonization and at the same time, electrifying the world mm-hmm. is part of our calling. So that's exactly what it means.
I think you guys need a gesture. So it's kind of like the Wakanda people when they meet each other. So when you say we're a G Vernova, you have a gesture to that as well.
Right. Maybe a handshake.
A handshake or something.
Unique to us or something. That's good.
So we talked about energy, and I think most of the time we will associate that there's a crisis. That's why we are doing a lot of, where all these government stakeholders are investing in all the resources to try to come up with solutions, right? And it's twofold. It's not just the energy itself, the technology itself. It's also talent. You need talent to sustain that growth that you're promising to the world, right? So Patrick, you joined the energy sector 20 years ago. I mean, I guess I can understand because it's quite exciting back in the days having, it's considered innovative. But why would any fresh grad in this age of time, when there's more equally fast-paced and competitive sectors like AI or technology or semiconductor, all that, when there's all these other options, what makes energy so special or fascinating?
It is fascinating. And I would argue that it is perhaps more compelling to join energy today than
20 years ago.
Case 20 years ago. I think 20 years ago, GE was a manufacturer of equipment. And if a customer buys the equipment, we maintain that equipment for the customer in the form of a service contract. Mm-hmm. Today, I think the proposition has changed. GE is a purpose-built company or organization driving electrification and decarbonization. So we've spoken about the energy trilemma. Mm-hmm. And given the product and services and the solutions that we provide, from electricity generation to transferring of electricity, to orchestrating the electricity, to converting and finally to store the electricity, you can almost envisage a total value proposition, mm-hmm. which is why we believe that our calling is to really drive the energy transition. And as such, I think it's a pivotal moment. At the energy industry, we like to think that we're the heartbeat, mm-hmm. right? We're almost like the blood that flows in the veins. So it is important that we help with the energy transition. So I think the calling to me at the personal level is very real. Mm-hmm. And as such, I hope that young professionals, trying to decide what is the next phase of their career and so on, views the energy industry as one that is critical and that is quite pivotal in where we're heading.
Without energy, none of those innovation or tech or AI or semiconductor can continue the growth, right?
You said it. That's right.
And within talent, I think recently I read this very interesting article on World Economic Forum, which it just titled that talent is the next energy crisis. And I think that's quite interesting because you have 25 experience in your belt. You basically witnessed the entire revolution of energy for the last half of the century. So I wanted to ask you about how can talent be prepared? What type of leadership you're looking for? So there are four elements that I read in the article that I think it's quite interesting. And I want to do a checklist with you. There are four attributes of the new energy leader to deal with the increasing demands and complexities of their responsibilities at time. You mentioned energy transition is a long, large scale, multi-stakeholder type of project to manage, right? So the first point would be adopt an internal activist mindset. Agree or no?
No, absolutely. I think you need a sense of conviction mm-hmm. and passion because the energy transition requires a certain amount of momentum. And as in anything that requires change at a certain scale, that conviction, starting with the individual level, becomes, a conviction at the enterprise level needs to be there. So that momentum is needed. And as such, having that internal activist mindset, as you said, is needed. I think that sense of passion has always been one of, the attributes that we look for in any good, GE employee.
That's very true. Like every people that worked or was at GE before as an alumni, everyone's quite passionate about what GE represents.
Absolutely.
The value of GE.
Yes.
So the second one would be engage and relate with the stakeholders with diplomatic skills, which I love the term diplomatic because for energy, you mentioned government a couple times that you're working with policies, with legislators, with a lot of these large-scale influencers, right? So what about the second point?
Well, before I even talk about the external stakeholders, right, even internally, I think diplomatic skills to me is knowing how to connect the different dots and drive a coherent mindset and mm-hmm. approach and converge on a solution, mm-hmm. right? And that is easier said than done. Internally, you know, anyone who work in a big multinational, for example, will always have to deal with the different functions. Yes. And it is quite common to have functions. Like I lead finance, we're a function. It's quite common to have functions kind of reside in their own swim lanes. And therefore, you know, whenever you're trying to push an agenda forward, and which may make a lot of sense, but engineering may not agree with mm-hmm. supply chain. Supply chain may not agree with sourcing. And even if sourcing agrees with supply chain, finance may not agree with, you know, this. And then HR may have a different view. So I think, you know, from the get-go, even with or without the energy transition, I think, especially for GE or any multinational of this nature, we've always been trained to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. We've always been trained to help bridge differences. Now you translate that to the external environment and you're trying to say, hey, how do I now move the ecosystem, right? Because the energy transition is somewhat a mindset shift. Mm-hmm. There will be a school of thought that will always hold on to conventional power generation sources and say that, that is what it is because we need power to be affordable. There's another school of thought on the other end of the table that says, hey, I need everything to be green, mm-hmm. right? Because that's the only way to be sustainable, right? How do you connect these two things? And now you put energy security in the middle, mm-hmm. right? So going back to the energy trilemma. So I do think you need to be able to diplomatically find commonalities in the problem we're trying to solve. You know the saying, you either find a common enemy or a common goal to drive unity. So you need to drive that unity, right, in terms of mindset, even though there may be disagreements in terms of how we implement certain strategies. But from the get-go, establishing that common platform, commonality in goals and objectives is important to move the entire ecosystem. And throughout all that process, you need a lot of education. We feel that GE Vernova is in a very fortunate position because of what we do. We should be able to provide a lot of momentum and in some ways education in a humble manner to help move the ecosystem.
And especially you said you're in finance as a CFO. I think every day people are coming to you asking for different resources and budgets. So you are really there to find that common interest or even to grow a bigger pie so people can look forward to and move on from where they've been stopped, right?
That's correct.
So you're basically negotiating every day.
Pretty much, yes.
Influencing, yes. I would like influencing,
negotiating, and helping, whether it's our teams or external stakeholders to prioritize.
Exactly.
Because resources are always limited.
Limited, yes.
So you have to prioritize.
So Patrick, as a seasoned CFO, you must have encountered multiple situations where you want to lead the transition, you want to identify interesting projects, but then, like you said, resources limited. How can you give us some specific incidents on how you were able to navigate or maybe bring everyone together to this journey, influence people? Can you share with us?
Certainly. And there have been many of
every day
instances. But you're right. I think capital allocation or resource allocation will be one of the key priorities for any CFO. But I think it's also being part of a broader team. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's not just about, in my case, Asia, but it's also winning for the enterprise. So especially in our current environment, as an example, supply chain has been limited, right? Given recent events, you have the COVID dynamic, you have a couple of wars that is not helping when it comes to logistics and the supply chain disruption and so on. So obviously, as a CFO, you know, if we have only one thing to sell, but there are three customers who's willing to buy, you want to make sure that you want to be responsible towards your shareholders in terms of optimizing the returns on that one product that you could sell. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're also accountable towards helping your customers to be successful. So I think it is a fine balancing act. There is no secret formula again, but
it's a case by case thing. Totality.
Exactly. Right? So what makes most sense for the enterprise? Our decision making cannot be dictated by short term returns. I think we need to have a longer term perspective, not just financial. It is important, but it's not all about numbers at the end of the day. it's really also about how do we then build a partnership with the customer in the longer term. Are we adding value to the economy? Are we solving real problems, right, in the midterm, in the short term, in the long term? So I think those are the constant discussions that we have, that we optimize and prioritize before we, you know, collectively agree on something. So you will find that this is pretty common trait for folks like us who grew up in GE and going forward, GE Vernova, in terms of how we're trained to be, to prioritize and to optimize whatever resources that we have, and we move on.
So that brings to the third point, which advocate for the purpose and meaning of their work in providing affordable and reliable energy to the world. I think you've mentioned a lot of that already. So the last point would be develop a new humility about new ways of operating, innovating, and communicating in a world that demands more transparency and trust. And that's quite hard for the energy field.
It is, right? And there is no one magic switch or silver bullet, so to speak. And I think one has to be open to different ideas. There's a lot of focus on carbon or CO2 emissions,
right?
And we're trying to educate the world about carbon intensity and how we should look at that equation and so on and so forth. But it's not just the power sector. It's also the oil and gas sector, because methane is just as, you know, it's also a gas we're trying to resolve. So I think overall, you know, in that fourth point that you mentioned, the biggest word to me there that means a lot and resonates a lot is humility, right? I'm here this week for different reasons. And one of the events that I attended yesterday was about diversity and inclusivity. And I think fundamentally, the whole concept of diversity and inclusivity, in my opinion, has an underlying foundation that is linked to humility.
Exactly.
Because it is only by being humble that we will appreciate and accept different ideas, be inclusive enough to embrace different suggestions. As one always say, right, having five solutions is always better than one. And so I think that's how I kind of, you know, interpret the point number four that you mentioned.
Someone did mention that when AI technology is now progressing, it's actually important to be able to put down the command, the prompt, in a more natural language, so that everyone is able to understand and no one needs to code anymore, right? And I think that's the ability that goes back to two things that you talked about, humility, that people are able to understand each other with compassion and to use a more inclusive term at workplace, and also going back to the diplomatic skills. I wanted to ask you more about getting resources together or just moving forward with common interests, because there's not a lot of international organizations right now. You're shaping the policy together, and that as GE, as a leading pioneer in this, you're facing all of these different policy interests, agendas, and considerations. How do one, if they're interested to join GE or the energy sector, how does one develop that type of skills to be able to face all of these policies makers that you're facing?
No, I don't think there is only one answer or one approach. It very much depends on perhaps the circumstances and obviously the individual himself or herself. I do think that, again, going back to the word humility, I think that is a big attribute that we look for when it comes to, you know, getting the right professional to join a company like GE or any other companies that is part of the, you know, part of the energy transition or doing something for the energy transition. To your point earlier, that sense of passion and conviction, right? You call it the internal activist. I think that's an important attribute.
Ambassadors,
right? The diplomatic skill sets and so on and so forth. Of course, you know, some of these attributes takes experience or takes years to develop. And as such, something that to think about, right, perhaps our education system today doesn't quite cater or perhaps even prepare, you know, the graduates with such skill sets. And one could argue that these are attributes that are more innate, and these are attributes that are more perhaps either you have it or you don't. But I tend to disagree. I think if we look at a lot of the perhaps the education system today, there's still an overemphasis to some extent, depending on which country, that focuses a lot on academic achievements mm-hmm. rather than a more holistic appreciation right. towards project management mm-hmm. because it is in project management that you deal more with people. Project right. management is about managing people expectations as much as you're yeah. managing projects. And it is in those environments that you cultivate skills such as diplomacy, mm-hmm. right, passion, and so on and so forth. So I think, again, right, perhaps that's something that we can all think about in terms of what we want from, you know, the workforce that is joining us and how we can help maybe the education sector develop those.
Mm. Lastly, I would love for Patrick to share with us what's happening in the future, maybe a trend or something that's within the renewable energy. For example, you mentioned carbon intensity mm-hmm. or maybe how the policy is shifting. Is there, can you give us maybe the last takeaway of what's happening in the future?
I think, you know, we can probably expect a few very rapidly developing, let's call it trends. Mm-hmm. Number one, I think you're going to see a lot more maybe polarization of what the energy transition mm-hmm. means before we converge. So you're going to see perhaps more opposing voices. And that is perhaps needed, you yeah. know, in the spirit of diversity mm-hmm. and inclusivity, because you need these differences to be on the table before we converge.
Right.
There may be differences also in how each economy or country pursue its own agenda when it right. comes to decarbonization.
Yeah, because developing and developed country have very different
Absolutely.
Considerations.
Right. The recent unfortunate wars
yeah.
have taught us how important energy security is.
Right.
As such, you will find countries perhaps taking a step back to remind themselves that while they want to be green, they also need to make sure energy supply is reliable.
Right.
So, you know, so I think there will be a different phases as we mature mm-hmm. in the energy transition journey, mm-hmm. perhaps the more developed economies will be able to afford a bit more luxury in terms of planning out mm-hmm. the green agenda, whereas the developing economies will have to think a little bit harder in terms of what's really affordable while being green and while being sustainable. So I think, again, the energy trilemma will continue to be a key topic for anyone in this industry.
And I think that really goes back to why diversity and inclusion matters, especially for GE, because you needed to be able to think at all these different countries, stakeholders, stages, in order to enable energy supply for multi stakeholders.
That's right.
And to be affordable and also not have anyone left out.
That's right.
And I think that's the most important key for an energy sector like you guys. Thank you, Patrick, so much. And I'd love to invite you back sometime and we can talk about, maybe next year we'll talk about the next trends about the energy transition. And congratulations on the spinoff. Thank
Sounds
you.
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much, Tiffany.
Hi, 大家喜欢这集的内容吗？欢迎在 Apple Podcasts、Spotify 或本集描述中最底下的连结帮我们评分留言，让我们知道你的想法。除了 Podcast 外 ，CareHer 更策划了很多很棒的线下活动，每个月都有各式主题活动，从小型亲密的商业主题 Salon 到集结商业领袖的大型论坛，甚至是夏日论坛，以及是年末会员专属的 Gala 餐会。透过这些活动，会员还能独家享受 Think Tank 内容以及邀请制的圆桌聚餐。更多详情，请点击本集描述中成为 CareHer 会员了解。